This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hamas strongly condemns Israel's assassination of the movement's deputy chief in Beirut as a complete act of terrorism in violation of Lebanon's sovereignty. Hezbollah warns assassination of Hamas deputy chief in Beirut is an act on Lebanon's sovereignty which will not go unanswered or unpunished. And people in Iran and elsewhere commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News.
A top Hamas official has been assassinated in an Israeli drone attack in the south of the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Saleh Al-Aruri and several others were killed in the attack, which targeted an office of the Hamas resistance movement. Al-Aruri is one of the founders of Hamas's military wing and its deputy leader. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier with more details.
It was definitely an assassination by the Israeli intelligence, and we heard from the Israeli media that they said that there is some sort of a security operation inside Lebanon. But here we're talking about the heart of the southern suburbs of Beirut. This is the place of the supportive ground of Hezbollah. Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah has previously said that any attack or aggression against Lebanon or assassination, whether it is a Lebanese official or a Palestinian official, and therefore Hezbollah would find it necessary to retaliate. This is in addition to another warning from Hezbollah Secretary General, who also said that an attack against the southern suburbs of Beirut would be also very equal to an attack on the capital, Beirut. And if we remember, in 2006, it was an equation that Hezbollah had put. If the Israelis do target the Lebanese capital, Beirut, and therefore Hezbollah would definitely target Tel Aviv. In 2006, they did not do so. Now, if we see this with the warning of Hezbollah Secretary General, who said that an attack against the southern suburbs of Beirut and not the heart of the capital, Beirut, would entail a retaliation against the Israeli regime, perhaps in the heart of Tel Aviv. Now, whether Hezbollah would consider that this is a time to retaliate through rockets or through another security operation, as you know, Hezbollah does have the intelligence, and they could probably also retaliate through another assassination against perhaps an Israeli figure, a military figure, the retaliation could be done against the Israeli army in South Lebanon.
The Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh says the Israeli regime's assassination of resistance group's deputy chief in Beirut is an act of terrorism in violation of Lebanese sovereignty. Haniyeh, who is the group's political bureau chief, noted the Israeli assassination of Saleh Al-Aruri on Lebanese soil is an expansion of the regime's circle of aggression against the entire Arab nation. He said history has time and again shown assassination of resistance leaders will only render the movement more powerful and resilient. The Hamas leader said the Israeli regime will not succeed in crushing the determination and steadfastness of Palestinians and their brave resistance. Haniyeh added Al-Aruri has left behind a long line of strong men who will continue to defend the Palestinian nation until the liberation of Al-Quds. The reactions continue pouring in over the Israeli assassination of the Hamas deputy chief Saleh Al-Aruri in a drone strike in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah called it a dangerous attack on Lebanon, its sovereignty, and its resistance. The movement also warned Israeli crime will never pass without response and punishment. Islamic Jihad resistance movement has also stressed Israeli crime will not go unanswered and that resistance will continue its fight until the complete defeat of the occupying regime. Iran has also reacted with foreign ministry spokesman strongly condemning this cowardly assassination. Nasser Kanani said assassination once again proves the Zionist regime is founded on terror and crime. Lebanon's prime minister has also condemned the assassination, saying the act aimed to draw Lebanon further into Israel's genocidal war. And now, as soon as news of Ariri's assassination filtered through, people were out on the streets in Palestine and other countries in the region expressing anger and grief. Marches were held in Ariri's honor throughout the occupied West Bank, including his hometown, Arura, and also in Ramallah, Jenin, Al-Khalil, and Nablus. Demonstrators voiced support for Palestinian resistance and vowed to follow in Ariri's footsteps. And there were also protests in the Jordanian capital, Amman, where people gathered outside the Israeli embassy to condemn the assassination. And now, Ariri's last exclusive interview was aired on the 18th of December, and in it, he spoke about an Israeli onslaught against the Palestinian people. Top Hamas official expressed confidence Israel can never eliminate Hamas, words that hold as true today as they did back then.
I do hear some of the Israeli leaders that the aim of this battle is to eliminate Hamas movement, as if Hamas is an army of strangers living in Palestine. Hamas is the Palestinian people. It is an essential, central, and the biggest part of the Palestinian people. In all electoral processes since 2006, Hamas won the majority of the seats, which reflected the people's trust in Hamas, because all those programs have been at the service of our people. All Israelis' attempts to distort Hamas's image and present it as an extremist, terrorist, and Daesh organization have failed so far. For
example, in the interview, the top Palestinian official also spoke about the strength of Palestinian resistance fighters, saying they're fighting for a just cause for which they are ready to sacrifice their lives. He was keen on stressing the strong will and determination is much more important than the resistance group's missiles and underground tunnels. That interview with Ariri was conducted in Istanbul by our correspondent, Rashan Saglam. Following the assassination, Saglam joined us to recount her experience of that interview and her impression of Ariri himself.
When I first was told that I will be interviewing Sheikh Saleh Al-Ariri, I felt like this is a responsibility. It's not easy to interview the second person in Hamas resistance movement. So I was really shaking and nervous. But when I sat with him as a person, he tried to comfort me. He tried to tell me that it is going to be going smoothly. Don't worry about it. And we were sharing what the questions are going to be about. One of these questions was actually about the Hamas leaders being a target of the Mossad, and what's been taking place, like Turkey is trying to actually threaten Israel if anything like this happens on its territories, and him, of course, moving to other countries, and the fact that he is actually like on the list of assassination by Israel. And he was really confident. He said, like, I am not afraid of death. He is someone who, you look at him, you see in his eyes that he was never afraid of death, that he knows that he one day he is going to be martyred. And this is what he actually seeks, not only what he is actually waiting for. He actually seeks martyrdom. And this is what I think that all these resistance movement leaders, they seek martyrdom, because they know that if they die, they're going to die for their own cause. They're going to die for a noble cause. So speaking to him about this, he was like very confident and strong. And actually, he said that he could, like, before the interview, many people, they told me that maybe if you don't go because he is on the list and he was threatened by the Israelis, and if you are in the same place with him, you could also be assassinated. But as a professional journalist, I wanted to do this interview, of course, for my career, for my curiosity, and because, of course, I wanted to meet Sheikh Saleh Al-Ariri. And now, right now, I am very proud that I did this interview. I was the last journalist that interviewed Saleh Al-Ariri. I'm very proud and I'm very saddened for his assassination.
January 3rd marks the fourth anniversary of the assassination of Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani. Iranians across the country poured into the streets to commemorate the event.
Families of martyrs and ordinary people have gathered here in central Tehran at Palestine Square to pay respect and homage to the lofty status and outstanding personality of martyr General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated back in 2020 on January 3rd as a result of the U.S. Drone attack. And still, after 4 years, his memories are alive and people are crying for his life. General Qasem Soleimani, at the same time, he was so strong and he was powerful and he was so brave. But at the same time, when it came to family, when it came to ordinary people, he was so kind. So people could not tell if that he is exactly the same person, because against the enemies and the terrorists, he was quite a different face. And he was exactly a counter-terror commander. So we see that that's why, because of such charismatic faces, such a charismatic features and characteristics that he had, these people are here. Of course, over the past couple of days, we hear a lot about his lifestyle, also more and more narratives of his life. That, for example, he said that, "I did not want to carry weapons. I just carried weapons and fought the enemy, the terrorists, because of those women and also men that they had to flee their homeland because of the aggressions of the enemy." So he actually rushed to the battlefields in order to support those who were in dire need of his support.
General Soleimani is known as a national hero in Iran. However, his vision was not constrained to the borders of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In his will, he says that, "I picked up arms to fight for the oppressed people, for those who are facing injustice and are being killed brutally by the terrorists in the region." So this is the main factor that has turned General Soleimani into a, let's say, international hero, that through the region, Syria, Iraq, and other places, people are venerating him so highly. That's because he did not just pay attention to his country, but he paid attention to humanity, letting go of let's say, the nationalities, Iranian or non-Iranian, Muslim or non-Muslim, Shia or Sunni. His very, very, let's say, mission was to save people in the region and to eradicate those who are causing instability and horror. And that's the main factor that has made him so popular, that after 4 years, you are seeing thousands of people showing up, in rallies across Iran to just pay homage to this great man.
Tehran University has held a ceremony in honor of influential figures deemed as icons of resistance. 20 laureates were picked out of a short list of 150 prominent academics, journalists, literary figures, and activists that have directed their efforts towards introducing Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Our correspondent, Gisu Misha Ahmadi, has your details.
A unifying figure, no doubt, a role model and a symbol of hope, self-confidence, and courage. On his fourth martyrdom anniversary, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is a source of inspiration more than ever. The reason why Tehran University has decided to recognize and reward prominent figures with outstanding works focused on the top commander himself and his way of life as freedom seekers worldwide, and in particular resistance fighters in Gaza, continue to look up to him and follow in his footsteps.
Today, the occupying Israeli regime and the Americans who were talking about destroying Hamas are sending messages and indirectly negotiating with Hamas about how to manage Gaza after the war and how to exchange prisoners. This all means that the axis of resistance has won this war, and once again resistance has paid off, the resistance that Martyr Qasem Soleimani stood up for.
Martyr Soleimani is not just a person. Martyr Soleimani is a school of thought. It's important for us to see the world through his eyes and follow in his footsteps. That is why I have published a book, including my research on Marta Soleimani's leadership style, that can be used as a reference for our future leaders. I believe we need more people using his methods in leadership for us to be successful.
The 20 laureates were picked out of a short list of 150 prominent figures who have made great efforts to shed light on the different aspects of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, both as a person and as a hero and the top commander that he was.
Haj Qasem Soleimani is one of the most influential people of our time. In Palestine, and particularly in Gaza, we owe our resistance to him. That is why we call him the martyr of Al-Quds. Young boys and girls in Gaza see him as a role model.
Martyr Soleimani is one of the greatest people in history, a unique person and a true hero. I think he is a great role model for our younger generation, and it's our duty to pass on his teachings to them.
He is very much loved by people all over the world, not just in Iran, but internationally. He is a symbol of resistance against imperialism, against hegemony, against arrogance, against occupation, against apartheid, against genocide. And he continues to fulfill that role years after he was assassinated by the criminal American regime.
In West Asia, many people who are fighting for freedom against global imperialism see their path to victory through his teachings and his way of life. And Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani will continue to be a symbol of resistance for generations to come. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Our correspondent in London, Amina Taylor, has spoken to Londoners about late Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani on the fourth anniversary, that is, of his assassination by the U.S.
His commitment was to bring safety and security to the whole region. And he saw what is happening in the Zionist state as an element which actually bringing insecurity, conflict, and is bringing it to all people. And he saw what happened in South Africa as a model that once we remove the apartheid system, then people could live in harmony. And he was committed to do that. And indeed, he set up the whole infrastructure for that to become a reality.
I think his greatest legacy is being able to bring together all different Palestine resistant groups together, like the Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, together with the Quds force, so that there was a coordinated effort and strategy instead of each faction working individually. And I think this has been instrumental today in Israel not being able to dismantle the resistance despite killing over 20,000 people.
The general had a significant role when it came to even defeating and helping against Daesh in Iraq and Syria significantly in 2017. He was also the commander of the Quds Force, which also helped defeat the groups that were for Israel and obviously trying to defend Palestine. So his stance was pro-Palestinian and was always there to be part of operations for the Palestinians.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. A soldier who fights for his country. On the fourth anniversary of the martyrdom of the top IRGC general, Qasem Soleimani, we broadcast a three-part series to introduce this well-known Iranian general to a wider public. Before his appointment as the top commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Quds Force, Qasem Soleimani fought criminal gangs of drug traffickers and drug dealers in the border region between Iran and Afghanistan. In this program, the third of this three-part series, we focus on General Qasem Soleimani's role in fighting drug traffickers in eastern Iran, along Iran's border with Afghanistan. Please stay with us. The eight-year imposed war on Iran, the so-called Iran-Iraq War, ended in 1988, and the victorious General Qasem Soleimani returned to his hometown of Kerman in southeastern Iran. In 1989-1990, in addition to heading the IRGC's Sarullah Regiment in Kerman, General Soleimani was appointed as the top Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps commander in southeastern Iran. True to form, he immediately engaged with drug traffickers and criminal gangs who were active along Iran's border with Afghanistan. This fight continued right until General Soleimani's appointment as the head of the IRGC's elite Quds Force. Iran shares its eastern border with Afghanistan and Pakistan. At the end of the eight-year imposed war in the late 1980s, there was little security in southeastern Iran. Criminal gangs, drug traffickers and weapons smugglers were all very active in southeastern Iran. Bandits and terrorists were also present and active in the region. From time to time, these criminal groups engaged in insurrection against the government of the Islamic Republic. Haj Qasem Soleimani, who had grown up in this region of southeastern Iran, knew very well the lifestyle of the people of this region. Poverty and deprivation are widespread in this region of Iran. And as a child growing up in a poor, underprivileged family, Haj Qasem understood very well the problems that the people of this region were grappling with. So his knowledge of the lifestyle of the people of this region, his experience of poverty and deprivation as a child, and his knowledge of the US-backed Takfiri terrorists made him the ideal commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, in this region. Like hardened, tempered steel, Haj Qasem had been tempered in 8 years of warfare against the Ba'athist enemy, emerging as an experienced general with unshakable faith in Islam and the Islamic Republic. He could sense the enemy plots and conspiracies against the Iranian people, and he was ideally positioned to scupper all such efforts. In addition, he was determined to improve the economy of the southeastern Iran, to improve the lives of the people who lived there, to raise their living standards, and most important of all, to make the region safe and secure. Haj Qasem's main concern was to improve the living standards and economic conditions in southeastern Iran, in addition to fighting drug traffickers and criminal gangs. One of Haj Qasem's colleagues, top IRGC commander Ali Qasemi, says, "Groups of bandits and criminals had made this region unsafe for a while, and rather brazenly had taken several people hostage on the Birjan to Qa'en road. The main road connecting Birjan to Zahedan was so unsafe that many people preferred not to travel on that road at night time. However, the great general Qasem Soleimani made the entire region safe in just 6 months, uprooting the bandits and criminal gangs who had plagued this region of Iran for years. At a time when the public was afraid of lawless gangs of criminals, Qasem Soleimani personally travelled to border towns in the east of the country, towns such as Teybad, Zabul and Zahedan, reassuring the public and pledging to make the entire region safe. Haj Qasem was a classic military commander. He was always ahead of the curve. In war, he was always on the front lines and often even behind enemy lines, carrying out vital reconnaissance and intelligence missions. In the fight against drug traffickers in southeastern Iran, he adopted the same tactics. He personally supported his troops by carrying out reconnaissance and intelligence missions. Criminals and bandits couldn't believe that a top military commander was so personally involved in these missions. Haj Qasem even negotiated with criminal gangs and bandits, offering them land on which to cultivate and become farmers, and offering them agricultural machinery and seeds to grow crops. He even offered to personally dig a well for them to provide them with water for their agriculture. Some of the criminals and bandits actually took up Haj Qasem Soleimani's offer and came down from their mountain strongholds, handed in their weapons and became farmers, with Haj Qasem's full backing and full assistance. Over the years, their numbers grew and eventually several hundred criminals, insurgents and drug traffickers took up Haj Qasem Soleimani's offer. In early 1997, when Haj Qasem felt that his mission was accomplished and that security had been established in the region, he wrote a letter to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, requesting a new mission. The letter read, "My mission has been accomplished and my work in southeastern Iran has come to an end. If Your Highness sees fit, I request another mission to serve the Islamic Republic." In the same year, that is 1997, the leader appointed him as the top commander of the IRGC's elite Quds force. Soon, a rumour started circulating in his hometown of Kerman that Haj Qasem was leaving the town. Both the general public and his colleagues with the IRGC regional headquarters in Kerman were anxious and dismayed at the thought of Haj Qasem's departure. In February of 2011, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei officially appointed Haj Qasem Soleimani to the highest military rank in the Iranian armed forces, the rank of Brigadier General. The leader referred to him as a living martyr and praised the work that he has done for Islam and for the Islamic Republic of Iran.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You are listening to Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio. I'm Atal, the host of this program. This series of Viewpoints is concerned with the thoughts and speeches of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Qasem and Sheikh Sadiq. Sheikh Sadiq, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, very happy to be with you.
You're welcome, brother. And Sheikh Qasem, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, in a series of the programs of Viewpoints regarding the speeches and the thoughts of the leader of Iran, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, today we want to talk about the important concept of safety, or it could be also roughly translated as security, and also calmness and tranquility inside, which these two terms or these two concepts are usually juxtaposed, come together. You know, one of the basic needs of human beings is finding peace and security. It could be on the individual level or the social level, and every person around the world wants to have a peaceful life, a life with calmness inside, a life which has no barrier, a life which has no distraction. But unfortunately, I myself believe that today's people in the world, especially in the 21st century, are very much distracted from the right path. And every day, these type of distractions and obstacles inside the human being, inside the spirit of the human being, are becoming more and more. So day by day, we are away from finding a kind of tranquility inside and peace inside. Sheikh Qasem, let's start with you, brother. So, when we refer to the religion of Islam, what type of peace or what type of security are we exactly looking for?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى بيت الطيبين الطاهرين. I think these two concepts or notions, I believe the centric one or the one that is place in center is tranquility and peace. And security actually is one of the manifestations, one of the instances of the way a person feels tranquil or peaceful. So this is a very important point that we have to have in mind. The second point is that we can have two perspectives with respect to peacefulness. One of them is that it's sort of internal, actually, feeling.
That's right.
And the second one is that it's a sort of external one. What right. I mean by internal and external is that, for example, you may be in a situation or a society or in a very specific situation that whatever is going around you mm-hmm. is not a sort of secure or tranquil situation. For example, you take Imam al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam in the day of Ashura as an example, that at that time Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was experiencing the most unsecure and untranquil situation. But at the same time, from within Imam al-Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, this is the report of those people around him, that the more that the Imam alayhi salatu wasalam would fight in that day, the more his face become bright and happy.
So, the more calmness you will find and tranquility. Yeah. Because the type of, I think, peace that they were looking for in nature was very much different from the type of the peaceful movements that we see nowadays in the world.
Yeah. So this is exactly what I said, that, you know, the situation that is going on around you is not always actually defining the way that you are feeling and you are experiencing from your within about the world.
Yes.
So this, I think this helps us to define what tranquility really and truly is. And then we have to go to the fitra again, that this one thing that is within us with respect to, you know, the having tranquility, where it's coming from, you know, seek the place of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in our nature, you know, that ruh, that spirit, divine spirit that has been blown into human beings, that is the source of tranquility that has to be there, irrespective of whether the outside world, the external experience that you're having is a sort of tranquil or secure situation
or not. That's right. At least this pandemic, I mean, COVID-19 has shown that this type of peace or tranquility that is made around us is man-made. Okay? So a very tiny virus, you know, in the world can remove it all. But you know, what about the peace inside? Sheikh Sadeq, let's get to this very important aspect. Because, you know, for sure we have role models in our life. I mean, the infallibles, the Masumin, okay? They had a kind of peace inside. That's why it's the most difficult situation. They could bear it all and bear all the consequences. But the case is that if you want to have this kind of security and peace inside, what should we do?
Let me try to paint a complete picture about safety and tranquility and happiness. So the goal is one goal. It's closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yes. And the problem is one problem. As we said, it's حب الدنيا. حب الدنيا رأس كل خطيئة. Right? And we know from the verses of Quran that أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَتْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. Remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brings peace to the heart. And we know that أَلَا إِنَّ أَوْلِيَاءَ اللَّهِ لَا خَوْفٌ عَلَيْهِمْ وَلَا هُمْ يَحْزَنُونَ. We know that they're not sad, they don't have any problems, they're not afraid, they are secure.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, closeness to the big guy, gives you security. Right?
Okay.
And being away from him, being close to dunya, and we also have this beautiful verse in the Surah Jum'ah. It says, قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ هَادُوا إِنْ زَعَمْتُمْ أَنَّكُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ لِلَّهِ فَتَمَنَّوا الْمَوْتِ. So it gives us a sense of what it means to be awliyaullah, waliullah.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you are a friend of God, yearn for death. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
No.
Does that mean friends of God yearn for death? They love death? Yes, because death is liqa'ullah.
Okay.
It's going back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
And the opposite of death is attachment
to this world.
Attachment to dunya,
that's right?
So on one side, we have detachment from dunya, being awliyaullah, yearning for death, being friends with Allah and being friends with death, remembrance of Allah, and all of these are synonymous with peacefulness of the heart. And on the other side, on the other end of the spectrum, we have hubb ad-dunya, we have attachment to dunya, and it's source of all of these anxieties and depressions and problems. And why is that so? Because of the limitedness of dunya.
That's all right.
Dunya is limited, resources are limited, and everyone is competing.
Yeah.
If you're against the world, everyone is going to take away your happiness for themselves to be happy.
And just look at the world today, man.
Yeah.
Just look at the people all around the world, how much they are taking medicines. I mean, these pills referring to the psychologists, following different type of therapy in order to find peace inside. And they do not find it. They do not find it, you know. And you know how much the rate of committing suicide is getting higher and higher in the world. The type of deaths the awliya Allah are looking for is very much different from the type of deaths these people are looking for, okay? I mean, that is in order to get back into the very nature of the divinity. Like Allah, as you said, closest to Allah. But this one, I think it's because of the obstacles on our ways. And day by day, it's getting harder and harder for the people to find peace inside. Religion, especially Islam in the true sense of the world, I think Shiite Islam can help us very much. At the same time, there are some, it's better to say, systems of thoughts around the world called themselves mystical movements, that they are working in the same place. I mean, but there is a difference between these mystical movements and the religious beliefs, okay? They are giving people prescriptions too, how to find peace and to be secure inside. But if you find the peace and security inside in the true sense of the world, on that time, I think the whole world and the mechanism of the world is going to work properly. And there is no need for an exterior power to execute security and peace for the world. There would be no war. There would be no discrimination. There would be no orphan in the world. There would be no, I don't know, atomic attacks on different countries. Isn't it, Sheikh Hassan?
Yeah, actually, you brought up the you know, the these mystical approaches or mystical movements that are now are a sort of on a rise in the whole world. I think the difference that we can distinguish between these sorts of movements, mystical movements, and the one that the mystical or the tranquility seeking basics that we can find in Islam is that these sorts of, you know, the modern ones, they lack both the beginning, al-mabda, and the end, al-ma'ad. So this is the problem that they have. So they do not start from the mabda of this world. It's because they don't recognize God as mostly, they don't recognize God as the creator of the world and the beginning of the creation and the being.
There is a God for them, but say live it and get to yourself.
Yeah, not a true one. Okay. So you are
the center of everything. Okay.
Yeah, so you are the center and you are everything to the, for this world and in this world. And you're not going anywhere, you know. So what is that? The thing is that between these two infinities or nothingness that they have. Let me put not infinities, but nothingness that they're experiencing. You try to just keep up with what is going on in the world. Oh. So this is what happens in, you know, these sorts of mystical approaches that they have. Contrary to what we see in Islam, that is coming up and that is starting from God, the beginning of the whole being in existence, and then going towards Him again. Mm-hmm. So, inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. And this is the one sentence prescription of the mystical Islamic mystical system. Actually, so this is the problem.
I mean, mysticism. You mean Irfan?
By mystics, I mean Irfan, but not the in scientific way.
Scientific way. Yeah, you mean Irfan in the true sense of the word. Okay.
So I was watching this show. It was a sort of debate between one atheist and a theist.
Okay.
And this atheist, I don't want to call the names. So this one, she said that, you know, I've been meditating for 30 years and I feel this tranquility and things like that. And then she said, "I every time that I wake up, I thank the universe. I thank. And then I give thanks, you know, to whatever is around me and things like that."
Okay.
And then that person, the theist one, he said that, "Who are you thanking?" She said, "I'm thanking the universe." He said, "Okay, what is this universe that you're thanking or you're thankful for and from?" And she didn't have anything, you know. If this universe is just like yourself, is something that is going to perish sooner and later. So it's just, you know, a sort of stupid thing to do. What are you thanking for?
And if you ask the universe, I think, if you got a tongue and ask the universe, who are you thanking? For sure, the answer will be Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah, sure.
So, thank you much, Sheikh Qasem and Sheikh Sadeq, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listener, for listening to us. To another episode, God be with you. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone or anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
In Yemen, a spokesman for Ansar Allah resistance movement says the Yemeni army's operation against ships that are owned by Israel or bound for the occupied Palestinian territories has taken a big toll on Israel's economy. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Website Grand News has covered this story and tells us more. The Yemeni armed forces have launched attacks on two Israeli-bound ships sailing in the Red Sea amid a campaign to pressure the Israeli regime and its allies to end their bloody aggression against the Gaza Strip. In a statement on the X social media platform on Monday, 18th of December, spokesman of Yemen's armed forces, Brigadier General Yahya Sari, identified the two ships attacked in the Red Sea earlier in the day as Swan Atlantic and MSC Clara. The statement said Yemenis had used naval drones to hit the ships, adding that the attacks were in solidarity with the Palestinian people in the light of the Israeli aggression against Gaza. The attacks are the latest under Yemen's campaign of pressuring the Israeli regime and the United States and other allies to end Israel's war on Gaza, a war that has massacred nearly 20,000 people since early October. The campaign is part of a larger regional anti-Israeli military drive that also involves resistance groups in Iraq and Lebanon. The commander of Yemen's 5th military zone, Major General Yusuf al-Madani, said earlier on Monday, 18th of December, Yemen is ready for any reaction to its anti-Israeli attacks in the region. Major General al-Madani said Yemen's armed forces could significantly increase their firepower to respond to any threat from any party that seeks to drive a wedge between us and Palestine. He also warned that any move that intensifies tensions in Gaza would lead to an increase in tensions in the Red Sea. The warnings came amid reports suggesting that the United States and its allies may form a regional maritime task force to counter threats to shipping in the Red Sea. It also came just hours before oil giant British Petroleum, BP, said in a statement that it had decided to suspend oil transit activity via Red Sea routes because of threats emanating from Yemeni forces. Iran's Tasnim news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The spokesman for Ansarullah resistance movement says the Yemeni army's operations against ships that are owned by Israel or bound for the occupied Palestinian territories have taken a big toll on Israel's economy. Mohammed Abdul Salam said on Sunday, 17th of December, Yemen's operations have left a significant economic impact on Israel. Yemen's armed forces have warned that they will target all vessels and ships that would use the country's territorial waters in the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea to reach Israeli ports. The Yemeni army has also announced that its operations will continue as long as the Israeli regime keeps up its aggression against the Gaza Strip. Mohammed Abdul Salam said, "All actions taken by Yemeni armed forces are linked to lifting the siege of Gaza and halting the Israeli aggression against the territory." He added, "If you want to stop Yemen's naval operations against the Israeli enemy, you must lift the blockade on the Gaza Strip, and food and medicine must be allowed to enter Gaza." At least 4 international shipping firms have already suspended transit through the Red Sea's internationally important Bab al-Mandab Strait, citing the potential of Yemeni attacks. This has reportedly inflicted $3 billion worth of damage on the Israeli economy by increasing threefold the price of goods that are imported to the occupied Palestinian territories. Stressing that the Red Sea is safe except for ships associated with the Israeli enemy, Mohammed Abdul Salam also praised the decision taken by the Chinese company to stop sending its ships to the occupying entity's ports. The Ansarullah official affirmed that Yemen's stance on Palestine stems from religious, national and moral principles, while describing Israel as a source of threat to the unity of Muslim nations. He reiterated, "The Palestinian cause is not open to negotiation, and we cannot accept what is happening to the Palestinians of Gaza." Also, Mohammed Abdul Salam announced that there is ongoing communication with influential countries with the goal of achieving Yemen's stated objectives, including lifting the blockade on the Gaza Strip and stopping Israel's aggression against Gaza. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. A growing number of international companies have decided to pause shipments through the strategic Red Sea as Yemen's armed forces step up their attacks on vessels bound for the Israeli-occupied territories in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Osama Rabai, the head of Egypt's Suez Canal Authority, said in a statement that 55 ships had changed their course from the Red Sea and navigated through the Cape of Good Hope on the Atlantic coast of South Africa since 19th of November, when the Yemeni armed forces and the popular Ansarullah resistance movement warned to target Israeli-affiliated ships in the area in response to Israel's incessant shelling of the Gaza Strip. Oil giant BP announced on Monday, 18th of December, that it had temporarily stopped its shipping operations by the Suez Canal after Yemen's growing attacks on commercial vessels in the area. BP said, "Safety and security of our people and those working on our behalf is BP's priority. In light of the deteriorating security situation for shipping in the Red Sea, BP has decided to temporarily pause all transit through the Red Sea." The Swiss-headquartered Mediterranean Shipping Company and France's CMA CGM announced on Saturday, 16th of December, that they had rerouted their services and suspended passage of their cargo ships through the Red Sea, joining Danish giant Maersk and German carrier Hapag-Lloyd in avoiding the strategic waterway. China's Orient Overseas Container Line also stopped cargo acceptance to and from the Israeli-occupied territories until further notice due to operational issues. Evergreen, the Taiwanese container transportation and shipping company, said it had temporarily suspended import and export services in the occupied territories until further notice, citing a security risk in addition to halting journeys via the Suez Canal. The container ship firm told its clients, "We ask for your understanding under these serious circumstances." The Bab el-Mandab Strait is a channel 32 kilometers wide, situated between Yemen on the Arabian Peninsula and Djibouti and Eritrea on the African coast. It is the route by which ships can reach the Suez Canal from the south, itself a major shipping lane. Avoiding it means vessels must take a much longer route, for example, navigating around South Africa. The Suez Canal is also a key route for global trade, particularly for the transport of oil, grain and consumer goods from East Asia. Journeys via the Cape of Good Hope typically add about 3,000 miles and can take up to an additional week, raising transit costs as a result of circumnavigating Africa. About 17,000 ships, some 10% of global trade, take this route every year. Any ship passing through the Suez Canal to or from the Indian Ocean has to pass this way. Analysts are linking the Yemeni armed forces' latest measures in the Red Sea to the Israeli regime's continued genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza, which started on 7th of October. The Yemeni army has intensified attacks on ships en route to the Israeli-occupied territories after the illegal Israeli regime refused to extend a Qatari-brokered ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip and pressed ahead with its genocidal war on the Palestinians of Gaza.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English.